And ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
Welcome to this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. We're coming to you live from our radio and television studios here in beautiful Northwest Pennsylvania. We broadcast live each and every weeknight from 7 to 10 Eastern on the Global Star Radio Network. We're also simulcast on Blog Talk Radio. You can watch us live. I suspect tonight is a good night to do that. Right here on YouTube Live on our official YouTube channel. The links to each audio video venue. They're listed at HagmanandHagman.com. Folks, don't forget we've got a number of different websites. HagmanandHagman.com is our show website. There, every night, you can catch the video as well as past videos. And HagmanReport.com, which is for a sundry of articles, a collection of articles and news that we find important for you to take notice. And I'm Doug Hagman with fellow investigator Joe Hagman. Together, we are the Hagman and Hagman Report, where we dig deep into topics that the mass media won't. We've got a good program lined up for you tonight. First hour, news, information, analysis, our analysis of the news. Second and third hours, we have a very special guest coming on, Mr. Jerry Robinson. He's an economist, and he's going to be talking about the state of the economy, where we stand with that. Joe, toss it over to you.
Yeah, we got a lot to get into tonight. Jerry, as I said, Jerry Robinson, Follow the Money Daily. That's ftmdaily.com is his website. He's going to be with us for hours two and three to talk about the economic chaos we see, the currency destabilization, and just the overall war on cash, war on currencies, war on economies being waged by the central banks and those in control of them. We got a host of other issues to get into, from the presidential race to skewed polling to the death of Scalia.
Yeah.
Still.
Yeah, and I've got a lot of information about that.
And terrorism in Turkey. Terrorists hit Turkey today. I don't know if you saw this headline, but we'll be talking about this a little bit later in the hour. 28 dead at least and 61 injured as a blast hits a military bus in the Turkish capital of Ankara, and 28 people were killed, 61 in a car explosion. The Turkey's deputy prime minister said the blast happened in close proximity to the Turkish parliament building and reportedly targeted Turkey military personnel. This and more terrorism news we will have later. But let's open with Scalia.
Before we get started, I want to remind everyone that portions of the night's broadcast brought to you by nuts.com. Are we nuts? We should be. I think we are. Nuts.com. It's a great website, folks, for snacks, all sorts of goodies. If you're hungry during the day, like us, where we have really hardly any time to leave the office, well, nuts.com, this is your answer. It's your answer. It's an incredible website that has all sorts of, well, they've got over 3,000 healthy snacks that cater to any diet restriction, including, I mean, such products like dried fruits, apricots, figs, dates, strawberries, sweet treats, and so on. Again, options for all diets. And we have a special offer for our listeners. New customers right now get four free samples at nuts.com by using our microphone code HH in the mic box. And as Joe said, we've got a lot of information. And Scalia, the situation there is intense. And
news came out today that the President Obama will not be attending Scalia's funeral. I don't know what the precedent for these kind of things are, but he will not be at the funeral on Saturday, which seems
what is he going to be on the front
off.
Nine, back nine, what?
It didn't say. They said that he would be viewing the body at a service on Friday. but he would not be at the funeral Saturday.
All right. Well, for those of you, folks, I did a video. It's a 24-minute video that really takes you from the death of Scalia to the circumstances surrounding the ramifications of his death. Now, if you want to get into this, Joe, right now, I can do that.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me start from the beginning, and I'm just going to toss out some numbers to you, folks. 32. That's the percentage of people who never heard the name Antonin Scalia. 32%. 79. That's the percentage of people polled by a conservative website for 40,000 people. 79% of that 40,000 group believe that there is some sort of nefarious activity with respect to the death of Scalia. 54. It's the number of Republican senators. 24. It's the number of Republican senators up for re-election in 2016. Now, these numbers all come together. 4. That's the number of senators need. Number of Republican senators. If you're following the right-left paradigm, Republican-Democrat paradigm, 4 is the number of Republican senators that need to be unseated in order to for the Democrats to have a tie in the Senate. And again, if you're following the mainstream right-left paradigm, these numbers are significant to you. 5 would be the number for a change in the balance of power in the Senate. 6. Well, that number is the number of administrations who had a vacancy in the Supreme Court during the 20th century, so this is not unprecedented. And 35, that's the number of cases right now under review by this Supreme Court. And that includes, well, when I, that includes the situation without Scalia. 7 of those cases are deemed to be pretty important, very important. 20, that's another number out there for you. That's the number of law enforcement officers who accompanied Scalia's body to the funeral home from the ranch. 3.5-hour drive. Folks, let's just go over this real quick. Friday, Antonin Scalia travels to the Cibolo Ranch, Cibolo Creek Ranch in Texas, upscale ranch owned by a guy by the name of John Poindexter. Not the same Poindexter as Iran-Contra. I've seen this, and it's not the same guy, all right? He's a Texas businessman. He's a wealthy businessman. And he happens to be a top Obama donor. Yeah. In fact, there are photographs of Poindexter, the owner of the Cibolo, Texas ranch, shaking hands with Obama and getting a medal of, well, it's a presidential medal that a lot of donors receive. All right. So Friday, Antonin Scalia travels to the Texas ranch, Cibolo Ranch in Texas, enters an 11,000 square foot presidential suite, attends during the afternoon. He attends as an observer, a quail hunt. He's one of about 30 people at this private party at this ranch. Friday evening, after this quail hunt, he joins the others for dinner. He's very animated. He's very happy. He seems to be his old self. About 9:30, he says, "Look, man, it's been a long week. It's been a long day. I'm going to go hit the rack," and he retires to his bedroom. And that's the last anyone saw of him. And I'm just kind of recounting what the deal is here. About 8:15 the next morning, John Poindexter and Scalia's friend knock on his door. No answer. "Hey, he's a Supreme Court justice. Let him sleep. He's tired." So Poindexter and Scalia's buddy, they leave and do whatever they do and come back about 11:15. And this time, notice that he's obviously conspicuously absent, so they pound on his door some more. Vigorously this time. Now, upon not Scalia not answering the door, they go around to the other side, other part of the other door, and enter the room. Now, it's unclear whether they used a key or whether it was open or what the deal was, assuming, given the fact that Poindexter owned the place, he had a key. Yeah, I mean, they have to break the door down. So they enter in there, and obviously Poindexter says, you know what? He's laying down in face up on the bed in unwrinkled bed clothes. And there's a pillow on top of his head. Now, that statement right there, it's open for interpretation, open for discussion. However, in the investigative field, Joe and I have interviewed enough witnesses, I've talked to enough witnesses in my 30 years as an investigator. You don't open with, hey, there's a pillow over his head or on his head or, you know, whatever.
If there was a pillow sitting above the head of Scalia instead of on his head or on his face, it would never have been mentioned in the
exactly,
first place.
Exactly, exactly. So those people saying, well, you know, it's between the headboard and his top of his head. No, a guy, somebody, if you find a dead body, let me tell you something, the first thing you're not going to say, guess what? There's a pillow between his head and the headboard. It's just not going to happen. So these people who just go off and they say, oh, it's between the headboard and his head, and so quit making so much about it. Are you kidding me? I'm just messing with the cameras there. Are you kidding me? Really? You're not going to say a flipping word about it. It's going to be a non-issue. So cut the crap. All right? So anyway... And I watch these otherwise reasonable and apparently sensible people typing away, say, well, you know, it was between, and my girlfriend, she sleeps with a pillow on her head, yeah. All right, we're talking about a body, a corpse here, at a potential crime scene. So shut up. Alrighty. Alright. Sorry. It's just, got twitches, little things, you know. Alright. So anyway. Obviously, and the other thing, too, there's reports of bruises. How many people have seen those reports about bruises? Have you seen those?
No.
Joe, have you seen them? No? All right. No. Well, all right.
Where were their bruises?
Well, people have said, oh, we've seen bruises on the body. Hang on, let me do something here. Yeah, no, people saying, yeah, there are bruises on the body. Look, folks. When you pass away, when a person passes away, and if the body's been in a state, if you look at, I don't want to get graphic here.
The blood settles.
It's called liver mortis, all right, and it would appear like black and blue. It would have bruise like characteristics.
Right. If he died on his back, the back of him, the blood would settle. You know, as the laws of gravity, the blood would settle in the backside or back half of him, which would make it look black and blue
right.
On the backside of his back,
but see,
his legs.
And, so some people were saying that there were obvious, and I can't get any confirmation on this. Nobody's talking down there in Texas. Everyone just doesn't want to talk. So,
well, the medical examiner from the marshal's office didn't even show up. So,
yeah, it doesn't matter. Well, see, the bottom line is, if there are bruises on his chest or apparent bruises on his chest, that would tell me
revival.
No, flipping the guy over after he was dead. Yeah. But okay. So supposedly no one touched his body. All right. But here is the ultimate thing. It doesn't. We could speculate all day long. You know what would have been really good if somebody would have done their job. See, here is the issue. Title One. The Code of Criminal Procedure, Chapter 49, Subchapter A of Texas Law states, basically, and I'm paraphrasing, you can look this up, you come across a dead body, there's a protocol to follow. Follow the damn law! And I don't care if your name is Cinderella. You follow the law! How hard is it to follow procedure? You see, people, look, we're being gamed. We are being gamed. All right. So, Poindexter and his friend walk in there. They find him. And, again, this is about 11:15 local time, according to the witness statements. So they get Cinderella on the phone. because they couldn't get the two other county judges. Cinderella is a county judge over there in Presidio County. So get her on the phone. I mean, so look, if I would have done this, I wouldn't have a job. I mean, if this would have been me, no. A crime scene? Are you kidding me? Anyway, so looking for a judge on Saturday morning. Apparently, they're all, you know, Amarillo or what are those, armadillo hunting or whatever they do, feeding their armadillos there in Texas. So you can't find anybody. Cinderella's out there shopping at the mall in Alpine. Get a hold of her, and I don't know how the call was made, but bottom line, she's having a problem. 20 minutes trying to communicate on these stupid cell phones. And anyway, she said, "Oh, really? You know, Supreme Court justice." Dead in our county. This is going to be history. See, this is important history now. Now she realizes that. She realizes that. So she must realize, as a county judge, she must realize that the next few things that are going to happen, that it's going to be historically important.
Unless
she doesn't care. Or unless she's so rock solid stupid.
Or she was warned.
Or she was looking for a glass slipper. I don't know what she was doing. But okay, so let's give her the benefit of the doubt. So, a U.S. Marshal and the sheriff was there. I don't know how they summoned the marshal and the sheriff, but suddenly they came. So they're there, and they say, "Hey, you know what? Everything looks, it looks like he just vapor locked, assumed room temperature during his sleep. It's all fine. He looks fine." You know, so she was kind of concerned about an autopsy. No autopsy. No worries. If you say it's fine, it's fine. And guess what? I'm just going to stay shopping. I'm not even going to go. You know what? Just handle it. It's one of the biggest things that ever happened in Presidio County in history. But handle it, guys. Go ahead. All right. So that's what they do. Okay. So, and I'm going to go through this real quick now. So the funeral home came in. Took the body. I'm not even sure there were any pictures taken, any drawings, any nothing. See, under again, and I'll just say this one more time. Title 1, Chapter 49, Subchapter 8, that's the law for this. That's what you got to look at. David Knight went in today or yesterday to try to get some answers from Cinderella, and of course she didn't, she was still looking for a slipper and didn't want to talk. And anyway, so. The body's moved to the funeral home 3.5 hours away, 20 by an escort of 20 law enforcement officers. I guess that must have been a parade. I don't know. 20 law enforcement officers to move the body 3.5 hours. That's a hell of a price tag, isn't it? What are they? Seriously? 20? All right. So they get him up there. And so Cinderella is still in the picture here. But she wants to be sure of the death before she signs off on the death certificate. See, county judges can do that, okay, in Texas. It differs by state law. You got to understand that there's different state laws. But Investigations 101 is all the same across the board. You treat every scene of a death scene as a homicide until you prove otherwise. Anything, any deviation from that, you should be fired, shot, spanked, you know, ridiculed, made fun of, whatever. You know what I'm saying? So you don't deviate from that. And especially when it's a Supreme Court justice. So she said, yeah, we're going to check with the doctor and just make sure everything's cool. The doctor weighs in 8 o'clock local time and says everything's cool. But the problem is, and this is based on my timeline that I've gotten from people in the Texas area, they embalmed him in preparation for his exit out of Texas. All right? Now, but see, you'd think, a reasonable person would think that he should be embalmed not before that conversation, but only after that conversation with the physician. Because that's the way you do things. So it was a cluster at the scene, and it was a cluster afterwards, and they ship his body back to Virginia, and that's the deal. But so, all right, so people wonder, well, you know, now if this was a Republican or a conservative president in there, and you know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg assumes room temperature. Do you think that the progressive Marxist leftist liberals, do you think they have a little issue with this? Probably. Probably. I should be listening to Whole Tones Live. Portions of the nice broadcast brought to you by WholeTonesLive.com. You know, really, not in a happy frame of mind when you think about this.
The last time a Supreme Court justice, the Chief Justice, died was William Rehnquist in 2005.
Right.
President George Bush was the, he was the president at the time. Not only did he attend the funeral, but he also eulogized him. And now we see Obama's going to skip Scalia's funeral, and the White House cannot confirm whether or not he will be golfing on Saturday.
Yeah.
That, well, from a Twitter release from the White House.
Maybe he, maybe him and Reggie Love will be out there doing the tango. All right. 35 is the number of cases right now before the Supreme Court. There's 7 of them. What difference does it make? Just to quote Hillary Rodham, Diane Rodham Clinton, what difference does it make? Here's the difference, and here's where the rubber meets the road, with respect to the, you know, what would be the motive to off, Scalia? Well, he's the closest stalwart to this, the supporter of the Constitution on the Supreme Court. Of the 35 cases, there's a case regarding immigration. That's United States v. Texas. Another case, Whole Woman's, about abortion, Whole Woman's Health versus Cole. Some have stated Whole Woman's Health versus Hellerstedt, although it looks like it's Cole, and Hellerstedt is, there's two different cases here, and it's, the news reporting is so sloppy on this. Birth control, as well. There's a issue there about birth control. Labor unions, which is in the form of Fredericks v. California Teachers Association. One person, one vote. That's in the form of redistricting the plaintiffs in Evansville versus Abbott. This is a case that could effectively force many states to redraw their congressional maps. That's at issue. Affirmative action, which in college campuses, Fisher versus the University of Texas, is at issue. And, of course, climate change or climate issues. So those are the major cases right now that are in, you know, at issue before the court. So, all right. So having said all that, now what? What happens to the cases that are before this, before the Supreme Court right now? Many say, and I respect Judge Napolitano. I watch him, and many say the tie vote in the Supreme Court lays. Case will affirm the lower court's opinion. All right. Now, many people are saying, hey, we argue this now without Scalia, a tie vote 4-4 would reaffirm the lower court's decision. Not so fast. Tie votes would most likely lead to a re-argument of the case, not a reaffirmation. And we have case precedent in the form of there are a number of cases. SCOTUS blog does a good job about putting this out. There were 3 cases in which the court heard re-arguments after a guy by the name of Harlan, John Marshall Harlan II, died back in the 50s. All right, he died of a sudden heart attack at the very beginning of the court's 1954 term, and they were without a justice. And of course, they heard arguments, but then. They did not reaffirm the lower courts. Well, they did temporarily in some cases and then brought the other cases out, re-argued the cases, and then settled them with finality. And a couple of them were pretty important. Now, what about a recess? Can Obama come in there and say, you know what, I'm going to throw in a candidate, because the Senate is in recess now until the 22nd of February. So can he come in today, tomorrow, next day, and say, because the Supreme Court is in recess, I'm going to use my constitutional, so-called constitutional right under Article 2 to appoint a Supreme Court justice in the interim, and that person, that justice would stay there until the end of the congressional session in January of 2017. He can do that. Think about that. Think about that for a second. Tomorrow he could say, hey, you know what, Eric Holder, you're going to sit in there for Antonin Scalia, and you're going to just be an associate justice there until the Senate does what they do. Can he do that? It's being argued right now, but it appears that to be possible, and there is case precedent for that. Would that stand? I don't think so. I think that there would be a problem. But it has, it's not without precedent. And again, a recess appointment to the court would not be necessarily be outside of the terms of Article 2, but arguably it's questionable whether it would be in within the sections of Article 2. What about Supreme Court vacancies and presidential election years? Yeah, I counted seven. The Taft administration, the Wilson administration, the Hoover administration, FDR, Ronald Reagan, Eisenhower. They all had vacancies during the Supreme Court or during the an election year, and in two instances in the 20th century, presidents were unable to nominate and confirm, and only two, a successor during the election year. But neither one of those situations applies to what we're seeing here. So, bottom line, what's the deal? Well, it seems like that it seems like at issue is the nominee now in place of Scalia. All along, it would that's the motive here. Or at least the exploitation or the, you know, never let a good crisis go to waste kind of mentality. All right, so who's in the running? Real quick, I picked out five that I see taking the center stage. The most obvious, Loretta Lynch. Some people say Eric Holder. I don't believe that. Holder's got too much baggage, personal and otherwise. I would say Loretta Lynch is in the running. Eighth Circuit Court Judge Jane Kelly is also in the running. D.C. Circuit Judge and... Hey, if I screw this name up, well, sorry. I don't speak whatever language this is. Sri Srinivasan. That's a South Asian judge. U.S. District Court Judge for D.C. Ketanji Brown Jackson. It's a woman, 45. And 11th Circuit Court Judge Adalberto Jordan. Now, he's a Hispanic, and that would round up the Hispanic presence on the court. So the bottom line. Where are we at? And just for those people who are wondering if I, you know, if I'm just lost my mind, in the New York Post, retired Brooklyn homicide detective, very good reputation, Patricia Tufo, and Bill Ritchie, former D.C. Police officer and detective, saying, you know what, this is just absolutely crazy, the whole thing. They were just mortified that there was no coroner's inquest and no autopsy, or no inquest and no autopsy done. So there you have it. So that's, and that concludes my opening rant.
All right.
Did we help? And folks, be sure to look at the, be sure to check out my YouTube, which I laid out a little bit more professionally, I suppose. It should be up here soon.
Speaking of YouTube, yesterday we had problems with YouTube and connecting to YouTube before the show. So the show was not aired on YouTube. And I just got an email, and I want to make sure, Dad, that I didn't do anything here. The emailer says, I found last night's show. Why did you remove it from YouTube? The show that I deleted from last night's show is a live event that never happened. We did not upload any of the hard recording from yesterday yet, did we?
No. Okay. The show from yesterday is on YouTube. It's there. Okay, it is there. It just doesn't have our pretty mugs within the YouTube, our beautiful, wonderful, well-featured, chiseled, featured faces on the YouTube. It's there. It's there. It's there.
All right, let me check and make sure I deleted the right one, because I deleted the live event that was for yesterday.
Right.
Okay, no, that's there.
It's there. Yeah. So just, you know, there you go.
Yeah, it's titled The Signpost Ahead, Amerageddon with Steve Quayle and Gary Haven on the Hagman and Hagman Report. It's four videos in if you go to our YouTube channel and hit videos.
Right, and if you look on the, if you're watching this via YouTube, just look to the right of the picture. All the options to listen, to watch, to listen, to whatever, it's right there. Just click here. Where it says click here, just do that. If you want to listen by satellite, click there. If you want to listen to BTR, click there. If you want to watch, well, you're watching it. If you want to, whatever you want to do, if you want to listen to the archive, it's there. It's all there on the right-hand side. So we try to make it easy.
Again, for those of you who are joining us late, we are going to be joined at the top of this next hour by Jerry Robinson. His website is ftmdaily.com. That's follow the money. Daily.com, FTMDaily.com, and we're going to be talking about a number of things from the global economy to geopolitics. from the Federal Reserve to the possible return of quantitative easing, negative interest rates, the return of Iran on the world economy. We're going to talk about the war on capitalism as well as the war on cash. And he says plenty to discuss regarding Europe. That in the studio email is the list of talking points from Jerry.
I got it. Before we get to that, I just want to revisit the Supreme Court issue. You know what, folks? Look, Greg Jackson was on our program, and he is very in tune with the United States Constitution. Well, here's the situation, all right? How many of us realize, you remember civics class? I mean, I guess they don't teach civics and social studies or whatever it is anymore. But we wouldn't have this problem if people understood that the judicial branch is the weakest branch of government. Okay, let's do a little civics class, our studio, live studio audience, and somebody, I got a lot of emails saying, do you really have a, no, we don't have anybody in here except for the studio dog. But anyway, the judicial branch is really the weakest of the three branches, and it was designed to be that way. All right, and Greg Jackson said that, and his study of the Constitution, I mean, it's set up to be that way. But think about what Lincoln said, okay? If you really want to understand the weakness, and the weakness intended of the Supreme Court, because people think the Supreme Court makes an opinion, they decide, well, you've got to understand that opinion or decision is binding to the parties involved. It doesn't set a precedent across the United States, or was never intended to. So people who say, well, the Supreme Court, that opinion is the law of the land, well, constitutionally, I think you're wrong. It's one thing to act as it is, and it's another thing for that to be actually the law of the land. And if you don't believe me, those people who like Lincoln, well, he was Lincoln. Lincoln on the, when he was talking in his first inaugural, he was talking about the immoral and unconstitutional Dred Scott opinion, his first inaugural address back in 1861. I'll read this, and then I'll turn it back over to you. Here's Lincoln about the opinion and about the Supreme Court. He says, I don't forget the position assumed by some, that constitutional questions are to be decided by the Supreme Court, nor do I deny that such decisions must be binding in any case upon the parties to a suit as to the object of that suit, while they are also entitled to a very high respect and consideration in all parallel cases by other departments of the government. What he said right there was, okay, yeah, it's I get it. I get it. The parties to the suit, yeah, the Supreme Court has its say. It goes on. And while it is obviously possible that such decision may be erroneous in any given case, still the evil effect following it being limited to that particular case with the chance that it may be overruled and never become a precedent for other cases can better be borne than could the evils of a different practice. Kind of saying, okay, well, it's best, you know, it's best of, better of the worst, I guess. And then here's the important quote, or important part of this. At the same time, the candid citizen must confess that if the policy of the government upon vital questions affecting the whole people is to be irrevocably fixed by decisions of the Supreme Court, the instant they are made in ordinary litigation between parties and personal actions, the people will have ceased to be their own rulers, having to that extent practically resigned their government into the hands of that eminent tribunal. Meaning to say, all right, if you're going to look at the Supreme Court as the deciding factor, then you know what? You made your bed, you're going to lie in it, and you're not going to like it, because he's talking about the Dred Scott decision opinion. So, which has not been overturned, so that means, hey, African Americans, guess what? You want to follow the Supreme Court? I guess you're two-thirds of a person. I'm done.
More on Scalia, as the ranch owner clarifies how he found Scalia's body. For the second time this week, Donald Trump expressed skepticism about how Supreme Court Justice Scalia died, alluding to a conspiracy theory suggesting he was a victim of foul play. They said they found a pillow on his face, which is a pretty unusual place to find a pillow, Trump said during an investigation during an interview on Michael Savage's show on Tuesday. The conspiracy theories started shortly after Scalia's death was made public and persist despite clarifications from the owner of the ranch where Scalia died. And again, this goes back to the pillow issue. The correction issued is as follows. The conspiracy theories kicked into high gear after the owner of the ranch where Scalia died told a Texas newspaper that Scalia had a pillow over his head. The ranch owner, Pondidexter, tried to clarify his comments, telling CBS This Morning that Scalia had a pillow over his head, not over his face, as some have been saying. The pillow was against the headboard, as we talked about at the beginning of the show. If that were the case, there would be no reason for even mentioning it. That'd be like when somebody dying in bed saying they died with their head on a pillow.
Or, hey, there's a box of Kleenex on the nightstand.
Right. It goes on to say that there was no signs of foul play or of a struggle, and Scalia's personal physician believes the death was natural causes. William Ritchie, a former homicide commander of D.C. Metropolitan Police Department, said an autopsy would put all these questions to rest. If you're called to the scene of an investigation, or the scene of to investigate a death, you will assume that the death is a homicide until your investigation proves otherwise, he said. If the death scene was handled in an appropriate manner, we would not be having this discussion.
So investigation is 101. We went over that initially. Right. It's 101. Well, you find a dead body, you call, well, go on.
The reason I bring this up again is because the Washington Post has issued an article, about the raving lunatic conspiracy theories out there on the internet and how, you know, people are so far gone mentally that they have to, you know, use these conspiracy theories to cope with life, basically. And that, you know, these are all based on unfounded, you know.
So CIA, the CIA coined the CIA or conspiracy theory. Basically, the Tavistock Institute backed up that. Actually, the Tavistock Institute created the language. Certain points that threw it into the various Tavistock outlets here in this country created a new language that included the phrase conspiracy theory. So what you're seeing is a brainwashing, mind washing thing. So anyone who's so intellectually numb or intellectually lazy. If you're that intellectually lazy where you are saying that this is all a conspiracy theory, well then I don't have any use for you. I don't have any use for you. I really don't. You know what? Go ahead. Believe what you want to believe. All right? Go with Cinderella looking for a glass slipper or whatever she does. Is that the right one? I don't even know if that's the right fairy tale. But the bottom line is, look, it's a conspiracy. Follow the law. Follow the law.
Yeah, and we know that this particular death will have big legal implications for a time to come. That, I mean, look in 63 when JFK was killed.
His head blown off in front of the entire world.
The protocol's standard operating procedure was not followed then either.
Of course not.
As with a lot of deaths relating to politicians and politics, Joe Scarborough being one of them. If many remember, he was a member of the House in Florida, and there was a dead intern found in his office.
Oh, yeah.
And that was swept under the rug.
Well, yeah, it happens. I hate when that happens. I hate when I walk in the studio and find a dead intern on my desk. I'm sorry. I just really dislike, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just such an inconvenience.
There's another conspiracy going around out there. There's an MSNBC or NBC, the Wall Street Journal poll, saying that nationally, Ted Cruz has overtaken Donald Trump in polling nationally, 28-26%, when Donald Trump has been in. I mean, it's funny to see, you know, you see 10 different headlines, 9 out of the 10 give poll numbers that show Trump with a double-digit lead nationwide over Cruz. Yet one pops up right before the South Carolina primary saying, oh, Cruz with this, you know, new lead. which is interesting because if you go on the NBC site, two stories under the story about Cruz taking this new lead is a story that says Trump has a 13-point lead over Cruz on this from the same day today. So we see this manipulation in the news on a daily basis. We see the manipulation in the markets on a daily basis. It's constant. It's never ending. The disinformation is one of the most powerful tools that the propagandists have out there at their disposal, especially when the disinformation contains a high level of truth and a little bit of disinformation, or a little bit of truth and a high level of disinformation. And most likely the people who are, telling the stories or giving the narratives, they're compartmentalized to a great degree to only are being told what they are supposed to know. Only the people at the top really know what's going on. And we'll never know if this was a murder or if this was a natural death. Maybe that was the reason. What is going on right now, or what has been taking place the last few days that we have not seen due to this circus of an investigation or lack thereof with the death of the Supreme Court justice? And that's what we need to find out.
You know, I am in favor of stepping back and looking at like the death of Scalia and waiting until all the facts come in. But when we're being gamed from
when
day
you can't
one,
get a set, when you can't when, get parts of the facts that are essential to the conclusion,
yeah,
you know,
right from the beginning. I mean, when you when the die is cast and actions are taken that destroy physical evidence at the scene that you cannot get back, you're cooked right from the beginning. It becomes a totally skewed situation, and assumptions that one makes. For example, you know, this whole big thing about the pillow. All right, don't tell me you don't lead off with a pillow over it. Like you said, if a pillow was not in a remarkable position, yeah, Poindexter would not have described it as such. And then to come 3 days later and clarify it, okay, and then have people say, well, you know, my girlfriend sleeps with a pillow over her face. I do that sometimes too. Look, I understand that. I get that. We're not talking about your girlfriend in bed or your wife in bed or your daughter or whatever. We're talking about a Supreme Court justice who's dead, unattended.
You know, a lot of people speculating about how he's an older man with lots of health problems.
And I get that, too.
Well, guess what? He didn't travel to Texas with a doctor. He didn't have a need for immediate medical attention or to seek medical attention in the days or weeks leading up for him going on the trip to Texas. He felt good enough to go to Texas on a little remote vacation. So it wasn't like he was having battles with some massive illness or series of illnesses that needed attendance by doctors or hospitals. He had not been hospitalized recently.
Well, he had a
and
MRI,
I saw another
you know, so
well,
on his shoulder, but I mean
he wasn't traveling with a doctor, I guess is
I know.
Especially when they say he had so many, you know, health problems. He was overweight, 79 years old. And then for them to say that he died of a heart attack, to turn around to say it was not a heart attack, it was natural causes, without an autopsy even being done, that alone...
It doesn't matter. See, you die when your heart stops. Okay, so and that's what Cinderella was saying. Well, I meant to say his heart gave out, so, you know, that's kind of what... Look...
Yeah, he died of old
just
age.
Just do the investigation now that we can't because the crime scene or the death scene has been skewed. I guess we won't find that out, will we? And also Eugene, his son, Scalia's son, he weighed in and said, you know, I'm really tired. I really don't agree with all the conspiracy theories out there. Again, he weighs in and says
I heard the family denied the autopsy.
Well, right. But see, here is the other issue. I don't care if
it's not up to them.
Exactly. All right.
It is not up to them.
I've seen cases where the family said, absolutely not. An autopsy is against our religion. We can't do this.
I can kill you and then say,
it's against our beliefs. No.
I can poison you and then tell the investigators, oh, no, I don't want an autopsy. Embalm them right away.
It's overruled, you know. The law enforcement can overrule and should overrule the family.
Right, because the doctor was not present.
Right.
Nor was anybody else present during
that. Yeah, it's just, you know, stupid
and that
people
is Texas
just
law.
Irritate me.
If you go
they really irritate me. You know, seriously.
If you go to Infowars.com, there's a story up there about the handling of this, and it states the law exactly in Texas how it should be handled, regardless
right.
If you're a homeless
as
person or a Supreme Court
Title
judge.
1, Code of Criminal Procedure, right. Chapter 49, Subchapter A. Look it up.
All right.
If I know that, Cinderella should know that.
Well, she was asked by for an interview by an InfoWars reporter and turned her back on him, being told for him to refer to a newspaper for her comments about the issue. But anyways, we got less than 10 minutes until Jerry Robinson joins us.
He's
going to
want
his take on this.
I'm not coming.
Let's hit some other issues real quick in the last 10 minutes. Exclusive radioactive material stolen from Iraq raises security fears. This sounds eerily familiar to what Mr. Gary Haven was talking about last night about in Iraq, the 50 tanks, the Humvees, the $1 billion worth of arms that were just left stranded in Iraq for ISIS to magically find, pick up, and carry away without any, standard operating procedure being broken. The military didn't go in and destroy the equipment that was left there. It was taken by the terrorist faction to be used in the continued fight in civil war in the Middle East. Well, here we have missing radioactive materials out of Iraq. Iraq is searching for highly dangerous radioactive materials, according to an environmental ministry document in 7 Security. Environmental and providential officials who fear it could be used as a weapon of mass destruction by the Islamic State. The material stored in a protective case the size of a laptop computer went missing in November from a storage facility belonging to a U.S. oil field, according to the company Weatherford, WFT.N. The document seen by Reuters shown and confirmed by officials. A spokesman for Iraq's environmental ministry said it could not discuss the ongoing issue due to concerns of national security. There was a statement issued by the company that said it was not responsible or liable for the theft. We do not own, operate, or control the sources or the bunker where those sources were stored, they go on to say.
Where the heck did I put that briefcase?
The material, which uses gamma ray tests to test flaws in materials used for oil and gas pipelines in a process called industrial gamma radiography, is owned by Istanbul-based SGS Turkey, according to documents and officials. An SGS official in Iraq declined to comment and refused comment to Reuters, to its Turkish headquarters, which it did not respond to phone calls or emails. The State Department said it was aware of the reports but saw no sign that the Islamic State or other militant Islamic groups had anything to do with the theft. So, there you have it.
Yeah.
And that was a big headline today on the...
Can't find it. Don't know where it is.
Now, next, moving on here.
Wait a minute. Check under here. No. I thought maybe there was a briefcase. Yeah.
Check Chicago.
Yeah.
On our connecting flight. This is something you're going to like, and we'll talk with Jerry about when he joins us. Larry Summers wants to kill the $100 bill.
I saw that, and I was just vibrating out of my office chair today.
Calls for global agreement to stop issuance of higher-value banknotes. Economist and potential future Federal Reserve Chairman, that's nice, Larry Summers, called for the $100 bill to be phased out of circulation, becoming the latest prominent voice to advocate the elimination of cash. In an article for the Washington Post entitled, "It's Time to Kill the $100 Bill," Summers, former chief economist for the World Bank, calls for a moratorium on printing new high-denomination notes.
Well, that's going to really
in the name
off
of stopping crime and corruption.
Right.
Right. More specifically, Summers wants to do away with Benjamins and even has a sight set on eliminating lower denomination value currencies like the $50 bill.
See, the war on cash and the war against the dollar, taking down the dollar, but the other part of this is the war on cash. Yeah, we're just kooks and nuts talking about this. Oh, wait, when Larry Summers says it, well, that's fine, because you see, here's the problem. You cannot control what you cannot see, and you can't see it if it's in someone's pocket or in their wallet or in their purse or in their mattress. It's got to be dots and tittles and ones and zeros on the computer screen. Then you can control it.
Well, yep. Zero Hedge points out the surface justification for eliminating the cash will eradicate crime and, in the words of Larry Summers, make the world a better place.
Of course.
Which is merely a ruse for the real agenda. And if we look at the public health, RFID information, they say that they're doing all this for the protection of the public health. And it goes on to say, for central bankers, as all the modest proposal will do to make it that much easier to unleash negative interest rates. Because recall that of the $1.4 trillion in total U.S. currency in circulation, $1.1 is in the form of $100 bills. Eliminate those, and suddenly there is nowhere to hide those trillions of dollars of negative interest rate yielding bank deposits. So with one regulation, the Fed, if it listens to this Harvard charlatan, and it surely will, as more and more academics get on board with the ideal to stop paper money, it could eliminate the value 78% of all currency in circulation, which would effectively achieve practically the entire goal of destroying the one paper alternative to the digital negative interest rates in the form of paper currency. The move to ban cash has been accelerating over the last year, with numerous prominent officials echoing Summers' statements. France introduced laws last year which would restrict the French citizens from making cash payments over 1,000 euros. Italy, Russia, Spain, Mexico, Uruguay have all introduced similar laws to ban cash payments over a certain amount. Earlier this week, the European Council voted to scrap the $500 euro bill, a decision that would reduce the amount of physical cash in circulation by 30%. A move that would be negative for the currency, according to Bank of America analysis. And last month, Norway's biggest bank, DNB, called for the elimination of cash to cut down on black market sales and crimes such as money laundering.
See, if you eliminate cash, where are you gonna put your cash?
In your chip.
Yeah. Wait. It's gonna be in the digital realm. It's gonna be one and zeros. I'm getting the cash. It's actually wireless.
Well, the former Bank of England, Jim Lavis, penned an article for the London Telegraph last April, which he said a cashless society would only be achieved by forcing everyone to spend only by electronic means from an account held by a government-run bank, which would be monitored or even directly controlled by the government. Sounds about right.
My grandma didn't send me. I don't think we asked you, Eric.
If we wanted your opinion, we'd beat it out of you.
No. What's your grandmother? No, Eric the Tech, fantastic good friend and fantastic man. So what's your grandma? So yeah,
that's a good question.
Yeah, well,
an electronic.
No more cash for you.
And again, folks, in our closing minute here, 28 dead, at least 61 injured as the blast hits a military bus in the Turkish capital.
Ankara, this, you know, what a horrible situation. But see, this is all leading up to World War III.
Yeah, several are dead as a car targeting a military installation in Turkey was blown up in Ankara. As Turkey's deputy prime minister said, the blast happened in close proximity to the Turkish parliament building, reportedly targeting military personnel. At the scene of the explosion and is located to close proximity to the Turkey's parliament, the president of general staff, army, air force, navy, and coast guard commands. We are very close to that place and we heard two explosions. One of the employees at a nearby hotel told RT by phone, I went to the rooftop of the hotel and saw smoke and a big fire, then a military... there was a military building around the corner. I was about 1 kilometer from us when another explosion was detonated. And there are multiple videos. You can go to RT or any major news source to find and see the devastation from those terrorist attacks in Turkey. Folks, we'll be right back after this short break with Jerry Robinson, FTMDaily.com. Follow the money. Follow the money daily. FTM
Just
daily.
Follow the money. That's what we need to do.
Star Radio Network.